The Geek Cave, brought to you by BuzzTime. Great minds drink alike. Shirtosaurus, digging up clothing from your past so you can look rad today. And GameStop, power to the players. Hey, nerds, we understand you. Drop those controllers, lose the wizard hat, and ready your Cheetos. It's time for some hard-hitting talk about the movies, books, and games you love. So get ready, oh searcher of useless knowledge. It's time to step into the Geek Cave. Now, broadcasting from a top secret and totally awesome hidden base, I'm Kent Harris, and here's Darren Wright, Justin White, and Chad Savage.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Geek Cave Podcast. I'm Darren.
I'm Justin.
I'm Chad.
Movies!
Yeah. Movies!
We actually ended up recording the movie segment 3 days after the other two, so Darren could have sufficient time to get the taste of Zelda out of his mouth.
It was terrible. You know what we did? We actually went to, first we went to GameStop, power to the players, to make sure that they didn't have any more Switches in stock. Still out, but keep checking. I did buy a Zelda amiibo because that gets you stuff in Breath of the Wild, like a new shield.
Did you lick it?
The amiibo doesn't taste the same. It just tastes like plastic. So then we went...
Turns out it's harder to swallow that.
then we went to a restaurant for lunch, and we got those little Buzz Time, Great Minds Drink Alike, tablets to kind of play and take our mind off the horrible taste of that thing.
Did you lick it?
I did lick it, and I ended up with a staph infection. And then finally, while I was in the hospital...
Man, that escalated quickly.
When I was in the hospital, I got on my phone and I went to shirtosaurus.com so I could get a new sweet t-shirt because they dug up my past.
Yeah. When the shirt got here, did you lick it?
It's cotton polyester blend.
Yeah, but...
I did lick it.
This is like a new segment on the Geek Cave. Instead of Will It Blend, did Darren lick it?
Did you lick it?
See, that's going to... The problem is, though, we're joking, but someone's going to take this seriously, and I'm going to start getting things mailed to me.
Please do, ladies and gentlemen.
Because like anyone who's received a prize from us, they've received the Geek Cave podcast return address. I'm going to start getting things. Can you please lick this? No.
Or they're going to wonder if what
and
was...
And send it back. The ones you got to worry about.
No, if you want to see that, you got to log on to our YouPorn channel. Chad, movies. So, don't look it up.
My Cousin Vinny, the movie, Joe Pesci-rific, is celebrating 25 years.
The two Utes.
Yeah, celebrate by watching it. I got nothing to add to that.
There is nothing. It's perfect.
So Deadpool 2, which had a great short attached to Logan.
That was fantastic.
Has cast Zazie Beetz as Domino. By the way, long box idea some point, Domino. I know it as an old game and as a pizza place.
Duly noted.
Thank you.
You could play the
Deadpool. And a type of mask.
Play the Deadpool video game. She's in that as well.
Okay. Speaking of Logan, it came out. It made all the money. It depressed, saddened, and caused many tear-flavored buckets of popcorn. Good
this
night,
is true.
Sweet Hugh Jackman. We can't imagine anyone else in that role. And since we're there, Darren, what'd you think?
I cried.
You cried.
A little bit. See, here's the thing about Logan. Going in, you could tell just from... You know, some of the previews that, oh yeah, this is going to be a sad one and I'm probably going to hate it. Not hate it as in it's bad, but hate it as in how sad it is. But it turns out, how do I put this? This is the best X-Men movie ever made. And there are no X-Men in it besides Wolverine and Professor X. It's not flawless, but it's really damn good. It's brutal. It's emotional. The actress who plays X-23/Laura she's so good. I really want to see her in more of these. Although this movie caps off the old X-Men universe. This is where all those stories finally come to an end. That's it. But I know they're working on a New Mutants film. Put her in that film. Please.
I had heard an interview with Patrick Stewart and he was discussing Logan and he said, what other superhero movie will you find a family sitting down at a dinner table this talking?
Yeah, it's...
I'm like, it deviates from all of the norms.
And, you know, it's...
In a good way.
But it's one of those things where, like, there's always a sense of foreboding. You know that things are going to get worse before they get better.
Well, yeah.
And it's one of those things where you may want a happy ending, but that's not the kind of ending that Wolverine is going to have.
You mean Logan?
Logan, Wolverine, same guy.
No, I thought you meant the movie.
Oh, no. Yeah, yeah.
The character.
It's not that. He gets an ending that is suitable for him.
Yeah.
It's a sad ending. And I admit, you know, and spoilers here, if you haven't already found out, when he's, you know, near death, he's like saved a whole bunch of these young mutants. Mutants haven't been around for like 15 some odd years. So when these new ones are discovered, you got to protect them like super close. He gives his life saving X-23. And as he starts to fade, he just kind of chuckles and like, so this is what it feels like. And Laura, who the whole movie is like pretty much a silent protagonist, maybe talking a little bit here or there, she starts crying and she calls him daddy. And that's when you just like want to throw your popcorn away. And you're like, son of a bitch, don't do this to me. So good. I don't have any other praise other than that, you know, sometimes you can do a dark and gritty superhero movie and it can be really, really good.
Yeah.
And this is one of those cases.
Another way it deviates from the norm, at least for these days, is there is no mid-credit or after-credit thing. And one reason, and who's the director?
James Mangold.
Yeah. Thank you. One reason he said was, A, he approached us with, okay, are they doing, this is what they're doing now in movies? We will purposely not do that. But another reason being that this is kind of the end cap. This is the end. Those end credit scenes are meant to tease.
Yeah, they're advertising future movies.
Next.
Yeah.
There is no the next.
Yeah, and there are a lot of unanswered questions, but that's how life is, he said. I'm just going to leave it like that. So,
I mean, not saying that they can't continue on with X-23 and that group.
Yeah.
But it's the end for Logan and the original X-Men. This is the end of that franchise as far as movies.
Yeah, a big reveal during the movie as to what happened to the X-Men. It just kind of comes out of left field. It's something that Mangold thought about putting in the movie, but decided that then it would just make the movie about the death of the X-Men instead of about Logan. And when you find out, because it's loosely based on Old Man Logan, but they make a couple really big changes. One, because they don't have access to all of Marvel's characters.
And
like
all of Marvel's characters are in Old Man Logan.
But two, they make a change to what happens to the X-Men, because in Old Man Logan, Wolverine happens to the X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the case in Logan.
Yeah, don't spoil it.
I can't. I think everyone knew by now that Logan dies at the end of Logan, but I can't tell you what happens to them. It's just, it's something that when you hear it, you're like, oh my God.
You know? Oh, shit.
It's something you did not expect. So I love it. My wife is the kind that she enjoys movies that have like happy endings. And even if it doesn't have a happy ending, that like all of her questions are answered. So I don't see her watching this again, but she didn't regret watching it once. And it's definitely going to be something I'm going to buy day one. The Wolverine was not like that. Most of the other Wolverine and X-Men movies have not been like that. Yeah. As soon as this comes out, I'm buying it.
I figure I'll borrow it from you.
Yeah.
I don't go to movie theaters if I know the ending is depressing.
And that's fair.
I never want to leave a theater feeling thoughtful.
Damn it. Now I got to think.
No, I don't want to be reflecting on anything other than the movie.
Yeah.
When I leave. So, you know, it was like Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice. The ending is just kind of if it hadn't been for my horse. Well, if it hadn't been for, you know, Bruce and Diana kind of continuing on with that, leaving that wide open, I would have really detested
seeing
that in the theater.
But they gave it away. Ending. They gave it away with like the dirt starting.
I'm not disputing, but that's what I'm saying is if it hadn't been for that, it'd been like, well, that was a whole lot of fun with a terrible ending. That's why I'll never see, you know, Dr. Horrible in the theater if it were ever put there. It's like, I'm not leaving on that.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. Last time I did that, it was the King's Speech, and even that was, you know, mildly positive.
Right.
So, all right. So go see Logan.
Yes, do it.
Unless you're like me, and then, you know, go see Logan.
This is one of the times where you should be like me.
Yeah.
Just don't lick.
Absolutely.
Just don't lick Switch cartridges.
Mm-hmm.
No, so, that's reserved exclusively for Darren.
So Cars 3 is coming out soonish, you know, a couple of months, and it's looking darker and darker with every preview.
Life is a highway.
Now I want to do a metal cover of that.
I want to ride it.
We know that Cars 3 is going to deal with Lightning McQueen having had a bad accident during a race.
Yeah.
And being upstaged. And knowing that he'll never be as good as the new ones coming out. But I'm watching this trailer, I'm just like, damn, what's with the dirt track and the, you know, the flames shooting up? And
it turns out it's Mad Max.
It's starting to look a bit that way. I still want to see it because I enjoy the Cars movies. I'm the one person in the history of the world that seems...
No, you're like the one adult.
That seems to like the movies as the movies and not just as, you know, toy commercials.
I enjoyed the first one. I haven't sat down and watched the second one from start to finish. I mean, I've seen most mm-hmm. of it just here and there.
The first one was a good homage to Doc Hollywood.
Yeah, but the first one was very good. Because I've not been really following this, have they confirmed that Mater's going to be in Cars 3?
Of course he's going to be in it.
Okay, well, I mean, when stuff first popped out, there was like no mention of him, yeah. Nothing. And like,
now we've gotten a little bit of...
Is that part of the sadness? There's no Mater?
We've got a few story details. Yes, Mater will be there. So, Radiator Springs will be there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is Mater having to be towed around these days?
Well,
now you got a tow Mater.
According to the IMDb page, Larry the Cable Guy is going to lend a voice.
Well,
he's a force ghost.
So, so I still want to see it, but a little
I'm
less.
I'm a ghost. Woo! Ah! No, scared myself.
So, as most people are probably going to bring their kids to see Cars 3, those that do, you know, guys, when it comes to kids in movie theaters, I just don't like it. I purposely go to movies on, like, Wednesday afternoon at, 1.
We go and, we try to go.
When there's the fewest children possible.
Either super late or middle of the day, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And a part of it is a lot of kids, they just don't have the ability to sit and watch. Well, a theater chain, a Mexican theater chain, I think it's pronounced Cinepolis. Yeah, as in a cinema metropolis.
Cinepolis, yeah.
Cinepolis. Is launching Cinepolis Junior in Southern California, which will feature beanbag chairs, you know, some nice. Comfy places, some reclining type chairs. Slides, a jungle gym, play area. You know, so kids can play before and after the movie because...
Yeah, they're not going to want
to... I'm sure they'll sit through a movie when there's a ball pit, you know, 20 feet to their right and a 20-foot slide to their right.
Yeah.
And, you know, a play area down front and the cinema's going to leave the lights on during the movie.
And everyone knows that kids play quietly.
It'll cost you $3 more per ticket.
To
have the privilege of not getting to watch a movie. So while kids are making not being able to hear a movie.
So $153 per ticket as opposed to $150.
You're not even counting the popcorn.
Oh no, the popcorn's always an added, you know, $75.
So I'm just. It makes me want to find one of those, buy out every seat. Like in the junior theater, so that, and then just stare at all the kids behind me in line. It's like, you ain't getting in, it's mine. Then just sit there and scowl at the screen. Like, not even, I'm just to be a movie that I hate.
I'm just
like, it's going to be Teletubbies the movie. I'm just going to sit there scowling at it, like, this is the best damn day of my life.
I was just expecting you to just like jump into the ball pit all by yourself, you know, kind of pop up, bazinga, and go back
frowning
under.
Frowning the whole way, just like climbing the steps, looking at children.
Going down the slide.
Wee! So anyway, this is a monstrously awful idea, and let's make sure that it doesn't ever happen around us. In the realm of things that are less awful ideas... Amazon is releasing a new series. Amazon Prime has been getting into original series. And a couple of them lately have been about cars. So they have Grand Tour.
Yeah, very
which
good.
I've really enjoyed it, with the exception of their Christmas two-part episode. It looked a lot more fun to film than it was to watch.
I haven't gotten that far yet.
It's basically a cross-desert trip in Namibia, in which they get lost three times. And
I could see them getting lost
and breaking their cars. Anyway,
that's par for the course.
But this new series is called Le Mans Racing is Everything. Now, for those of you who aren't aware, Le Mans is a 24-hour race where they're in souped-up cars and you just drive it this track, this, you know, basically a road for 24 hours. And what this particular series is supposed to show is the development of the cars from Porsche to Ferrari to Toyota. I mean, just every major car company effectively tries to create the baddest car they can for this race. And then it's going to follow the racers. It's going to follow the development of the cars, and then it's going to follow the race itself. So I'm kind of excited by that. I've developed an appreciation, at least for these kinds of races, even if I don't sit and watch them through.
Right.
And no one watches all of Le Mans.
Yeah. See, at first I thought you said Lamaze, like the birth, breathing.
So did process. I thought that...
Yes. Racing is everything there, too. you got to get the head out.
I thought it was like something like that, where like they are on a racetrack, but there's also a woman in the back seat giving birth.
Oh.
And you've got to complete a certain number of laps before the kid pops out.
Ooh, that would be rough. So now,
I would rather have one lady giving birth, like in the middle, like say it's a NASCAR type thing, just going around a circle. In the middle, in like a soundproof room, is one lady giving birth.
Well, you got to be able to hear the cars.
Well, yeah, and just randomly, and let's check on you know Susan.
Bing.
Ah! No, still only at 4 centimeters. Okay, back to the race.
What ends first? Who's in the lead when the head doth crown?
I see the head. There's one lap to go.
So, in the realm of horrible things that we end up talking about on this, especially... Oh, man.
That could go anywhere.
Jordan Peele of Key & Peele, okay?
Yeah.
Has... made a movie, a horror satire called Get Out.
I've seen the preview. It's creepy.
It's a play on about 13 different horror movie styles. I mean, there's these different call outs here, there, and yonder. And just in the ones, it's like from Stepford Wives to Invasion of the Body Snatchers to the creepy village trope.
Mm-hmm.
By all accounts, it's pretty good. Critically, it's doing well. But leave it to the internet to take something like that and just ruin it.
That's what they do.
One of the things about this that hasn't been done in a long time is that it has a black protagonist, you know? And the white people are the bad guys, you know, kind of through it. And so a lot of people are calling, a lot of the review sites and so forth, are calling the movie racist for having a bunch of strong black characters and creepy, screwy white characters. So, y'all, I don't know if you looked around much, but most of the white people I know are kind of creepy.
He's not lying.
You know, a little bit on the, you know, on the crazy side. It's one of the, I promise, it's going to connect. One of the big criticisms, like honest criticisms of the newest Ghostbusters movie, was that Kevin, the secretary,
it was Thor,
was a nothing character. He was only there to look pretty. He didn't give any much meaningful dialogue. He was just kind of this thing. And there was like, oh wow, that's what women feel like all the time when they go see a movie, is that this character added nothing. I couldn't identify or otherwise. I wonder if that's not similar to what's happening here, is that there's an entire population, you know, the African-American population that isn't represented in any way, shape, or form in a realistic or even a positive way. And so this movie is not for people that look like me.
Right.
This movie is for them primarily. Not that I couldn't enjoy it or otherwise, but this other set.
Kind of like my criticism of Luke Cage.
Yeah.
I thought Luke Cage was just kind of okay, but I don't think I was the target for it.
I don't think we were.
Yeah.
Now, I enjoyed it, and I think I enjoyed it most because I have a lot of ministers on my Facebook feed that watch things like this and can supply
right.
some of this background from, and not because they're ministers, but because they're coming from all these separate walks and dealing with a whole bunch of different issues across. And Luke Cage did that, dealing
yeah.
with a lot of that, especially the black versus white dynamic in
yeah.
prisons and communities and in media portrayal.
It was well told, yeah.
So, but Get Out is really funny too. So, if when it comes out, you know,
not from the one preview I saw. The one I watched, scared.
Well, you remember Cabin in the Woods was first presented as like a legit straight up horror movie.
That's true.
So it you was. Just gotta like look around a little bit.
So, and it's satire in that realm where there's parts of it that are meant to be, you know, scary and creepy and horrifying. But there's the other parts that are like, I see what you did there. I see what you did there. You do it for Randolph Scott. Randolph Scott. You know, Blazing Saddles was the same way. There were parts of it that were strictly, this is a Western. That's what a Western's supposed to be. And then there were parts like, I see what you did there, Mel, you sly bastard. into happier things, better things. Rurouni Kenshin is one of my favorite anime, and becoming rapidly one of my favorite manga. It has also been made into a live action trilogy. To put it bluntly, it is the standard by which I think all other manga to movie adaptions should be measured. It is lacking in CGI. Basically, they only use the CGI for some of the blood effects and fire effects. Most everything else is done through wire work, which not crazy wire work like in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Or is it Crouching Dragon,
Hidden Dragon? No, you're right.
Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, where they're like flying through the air. This one is basically meant to make somebody look like they're running really fast or that they're able to move supernaturally fast. It's really kind of amazing. The third movie ends with a 4-on-1 sword fight that they're backed up far enough to actually be able to see this entire thing going. Well, 3-on-1 sword fight and then a fourth guy who just tries to punch real hard a lot. So Sonosuke Sagara, who is way outmatched in that particular fight, but it's just so glorious that he doesn't give up. It's like he knows that it's not, this isn't his fight. He shouldn't be there. He still goes in and punches.
God bless
glorious.
Him. Yeah.
If you are interested in kind of a movie that it is not playing to Americans, you know, it doesn't have American cultural references. It's not in English. It is, I mean, it's got an English language track, but skip it because who does that? Watch it and enjoy it. It is just this wonderful slice of how Japanese, like a Japanese movie for Japanese people is made. And you can really enjoy it and sink your teeth into it as well. DuckTales.
Woo!
David Tennant, the Purple Man. Yeah, we talked about it one or two.
Come by, Abigail!
Webigail. Yeah, I know. I messed up.
The...
Damn it, Darren.
Webigail! There.
The preview is interesting. I think they've captured the spirit of DuckTales. I'm not sold on the animation style just yet.
Same.
And I'm good with the voices. I thought for a while that I wouldn't be. It's like, no, that's not That's not Scrooge McDuck. That's not Huey, Dewey, Louie. That's not. But, you know, it kind of is. Well, for this iteration, yeah.
I mean, I think I was most surprised by Webby's voice. Because, I mean, the actress definitely doesn't go into, like, the Uncle Scrooge kind of thing. I mean, yeah, it's, like, straight up.
She's not a toddler.
She's not a toddler. She sounds like a really excited. But the problem
she
is.
She sounds like a fangirl.
Yeah. And the problem is, though, a lot of pop culture nowadays is kind of trending toward that's just the new stereotype.
Mm. I hadn't considered that. That is accurate. Some of the things that I noticed in the trailer that I enjoyed and appreciated, one, that Scrooge kind of retired from the adventuring, like the being around the nephews kind of increases that likelihood of doing it.
He was hashtag done.
Yeah. This idea that I'm back, you know, is part of the, the next one is that Donald is an adventurer in his own right.
I was hoping you would get on that.
I love the idea that, you know, Donald has been just a screw up in just about every iteation. I mean,
Donald's a badass though.
But I mean, when you get down to it, I mean, even in the comics and early cartoons, he was in the Navy. I mean, he fought in the war. He survived the war.
Yeah.
You know, he's watching his sister's kids, you know, taking care. We don't know what happened to her. You know, there's this sense that he really did do a whole bunch of stuff. And whether it was by dumb luck, by skill, or a combination of the two, he is an adventurer in his own right. And the nephews never really understood it or got it. You know, when Webigail is saying, you know, what's it like to, you know, live with Uncle Donald? You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, what?
Yeah. It's the nephews, that kind of thing.
And I'm glad that they're taking that route with this version, because in the original, he shipped the nephews off to live with Scrooge because he joined the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And every time you see him, he's swabbing the deck or he's getting his butt chewed out for just screwing up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much, for a long time, how Donald was portrayed. Just this comic addition to, it was funny when he lost his temper. That was his, that was his shtick. I'm glad they're giving him a bit of depth. He's out there doing stuff.
Mm-hmm. And Launchpad was perfect.
Yeah.
Launchpad in the trailer is absolutely, it's not the voice, but that's Launchpad. Launchpad McQuack.
Oh, no, the ground.
Wrecking the stuff. Avatar 2 has been delayed again. You guys care?
No.
Yeah, care?
Trying, but I can't.
I didn't know they were making a second one, so
man. Oh, yeah, they're making 2 and 3.
Two and three, and James Cameron told somebody, he's like, well, I guess 2018's out.
So Smurfahannas in space has been delayed.
Yeah, can't they just do it like they did the next two Pocahontas movies, straight to DVD and call it a day?
And just pretend that they
one
didn't
would
happen.
Hope, but I doubt
Avatar 2, The New World.
I doubt we're going to get to it.
Avatar 3, Adventures with Raccoons.
They just put it right to Amazon Prime.
That is like, the new direct-to-video.
that's the new direct-to-video, is putting it out on Amazon for rent or buy.
Or CW Seed.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of Amazon Prime, you were talking about a blue costumed hero.
Yeah. Amazon Prime has been working on a Tick series.
Spoon!
It doesn't have Patrick Warburton in it. The freaking page reloaded. Basically, they revealed the costume. It looks like it's made of rubber. It's blue. It looks like the Tick. That's pretty much all we know. And that they're working on it. It's not Patrick Warburton, so it instantly loses points.
It does. It does indeed.
I mean, rather than creating a brand, why not just bring, you know, a revival of that series that only lasted one season?
Eight episodes.
Because it was good.
Speaking of underappreciated superheroes, Nightwing is getting a movie.
I heard rumors of that, yes.
And it's going to be directed by the guy who did the Lego Batman movie.
Huh.
I'm okay with this.
Yes.
Now, is it a live-action, legitimate
superhero? It takes place in the DC Expanded Universe. So the same film universe that has Batman v Superman and Wonder Woman this June has Nightwing.
Nice.
So
I hope it's got the same tone as Lego Batman.
Yeah.
In that super serious dark world, but you get...
I have a feeling that it's going to be a little bit more lighthearted with it being Dick Grayson.
Kind of have to be.
You know,
it's not like you get much darker.
The kids called me Dick. They can be so cruel. So, I'm really looking forward to that one.
So coming up, we've got some things coming up here pretty quickly. It's March. So like just a couple of days after you are downloading this and listening to this. Thank you.
Very much.
Is we'll have Iron Fist.
Yep.
We'll be dropping on Friday. Because we are uploading this on a Wednesday, right?
Yes.
So, like, in 2 days.
Yeah, the unfortunate thing is the early reviews are not friendly.
The early reviews are not friendly. They're not friendly for a few reasons.
One was stupid, but a lot of them is, you know, maybe founded in something.
So, as is typically the case with such things, we'll give you a review. I'm planning on Friday morning getting up early, watching the first, you know, 3 or 4 episodes and writing a review.
All right.
And
you can find that at dtapepodcast.com.
Yeah, trying to get that up hopefully by the afternoon. let's skip the stupid reason why it's getting bad reviews.
Yeah, everyone's already heard that one.
Long story short, it's about co-opting culture. We've talked about that in other forms. Specifically, we just talked about it with Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
So we'll skip that this time. It's just the same discussion again. The other thing I'm super excited about is Alien Covenant is coming soon. So Alien, in terms of series, like movie series that I really enjoy because I got to watch them at the right time in my life, is like the Nightmare on Elm Street series. I loved the old Robert Englund, Freddy Krueger movies. May 19th is coming.
Yeah, we were talking before we started taping Alien about Covenant. When it's coming out.
Aliens is in my top 5 of like movie series. Even the bad ones, I still enjoy. Like I really enjoyed. Now, not the Alien versus Predator movies. Those are a different.
No, Archie versus Predator is great.
Archie versus Predator, I'm sure, is amazing. Also,
Jughead saves the day.
Batman. No, he doesn't.
Batman versus Alien is also kind of fun. But the first Alien movie was a no-joke horror movie in space. The second one was a horror action movie. The third one was, I'm pretty sure it was supposed to be a period drama. Because they got rid of Joss Whedon's script and instead made it awful. But the character Ripley was still, her arc was still great. And it had a good ending.
Yeah.
Which they promptly ruined for Alien Resurrection. But because it was Sigourney Weaver, it still had the right attitude and the right tone, which was glorious and lovely. And as divisive as Prometheus was, I really loved how they set up the beginnings of the Xenomorphs and how it kind of built this thing. As weird as some of the other stuff was going on, I love this idea of the engineers trying to create these things, which now we're told maybe they didn't. but that's because Ridley Scott, you know, he does his thing. So Alien Covenant, which is going to give that next chapter. Hopefully it doesn't suck. I would like to avoid that. Because sometimes Hollywood just messes things up. Speaking of Hollywood messing things up, the Writers Guild of America is possibly going to strike again. Last week, they
had a move. Thank God we don't have writers.
From the time that you're listening to this, last week, there was supposedly a meeting, and we don't know what the results of that are yet, but everything is looking more and more like there is probably going to be a writer's strike. The like I said, no clear demands yet, but the likely reason is going to hinge on writer-producer salary, which has seen a 23% decline in median income in the last 3 years.
Wow.
So, I mean, this isn't like something that's been going on for 20 years and suddenly they're looking like, what the? No, in the last 3 years, which there hasn't been enough inflation to justify that. So the writer-producer salary, which I guess they give a writer a producer credit to increase the amount that they would be able to get, or they give a producer a writing credit to decrease what they, however it works out. When these things happen, we end up with shorter seasons. We tend to end up with a glut of reality shows.
God.
Now,
we did get Dr. Horrible, though.
We did get Dr. Horrible. Now, with the advent of Netflix originals and Amazon Prime originals, depending on, because the internet does things differently. You know, the internet doesn't, internet shows don't follow the same rules as cable and satellite. So we may actually see a whole bunch of of new shows on those sites, you know, Hulu, Amazon Prime, Netflix, Crackle, you know, these kind of things, because they would be able to negotiate differently without necessarily having to follow these union guidelines. We don't know. It's a thought. It's an idea. It's a possibility. We kind of hope that they can come to an end before that, because strikes are rarely good for anyone.
Yeah.
Not long term. Short term, you can kind of make a point. Long term, it generally leaves a lot of ill will to everyone. Mm-hmm. But again, that's the way Hollywood kind of treats its creative talent. Which leads us into my review, unless you have other stuff to talk about.
Nope. So.
And now, it's time for Chad Savage's Random Movie Review.
So, Justin and I, because I found that it's a little bit more fun to watch these if I rope somebody else into it.
Hi!
And my spouse, who is often okay with that, she
said
she,
no.
Well, she's taking care of, you know, the child. And so we watched Sunset Boulevard, which is not to be confused with Sunset Overdrive, which was a disappointing Xbox One exclusive.
I thought it was okay.
Okay, yes, but not great, and hence disappointing. Sunset Boulevard is...
Well, explain to everybody what you knew about this movie before we watched it.
Practically nothing. Before watching, I only knew the one quote...
Here's what I knew about it. I knew the one quote, but I didn't know it came from that movie. So I had no frame of reference as to what I was watching. I didn't know who was in it, when it was made, color or black and white. I knew nothing.
We went in as blank slate gets.
Yes.
All right.
And so, long story short, we'll jump to the punchline in case you don't want to hear any more about it. See it once, but you probably don't need to see it again. It is... I'd say watch it with friends.
Yeah.
You know, you get a group of people, some popcorn, you want to watch an old-timey movie. It was made in 1949, released in 1950. It's pretty good. It is a film noir-style black comedy in which you open up with a dead body who then proceeds to narrate how he came to be a dead body.
Okay.
There actually was a different beginning filmed... for test audiences that opened up in a mausoleum with a whole bunch of dead people talking to each other and talking about how they get there, and one guy basically telling his story. Test audiences laughed, you know, because it's funny, this idea, but then it clashed with the rest of the tone of the movie, which is very serious in tone, despite being kind of hysterical.
Yeah.
So... The way that I might describe this is to say, take the movie Misery and the basic tone of the Maltese Falcon with the narration of Blade Runner, the theatrical edition, and you have kind of this mishmash of what's going on. Bill Holden, I think is his name. Anyway, a guy named Gillis is the character, and he is a writer, a Hollywood writer who is not getting any work anywhere. He tries to call in favors, no work. One of the Hollywood readers, because this is back in the studio time when the studio would hire people to specifically read screenplays and tell you if it's good or not, who doesn't know that he's standing in the room, says, "Yeah, I wouldn't bother. It's pretty terrible," to one of his screenplays. And so nothing's coming out. His car's about to be repossessed. He's 3 months behind on his rent. And so one day he's driving along and he sees the repo men to get his car.
And they see him.
They see him. We get a 1950s version of a car chase, which is less exciting than North by Northwest's. And he blows a tire. So he pulls into the nearest driveway he can find, parks it in what looks like an abandoned garage, and realizes that it's actually the home of Norma Desmond, who is an aging silent film actress. And by aging, 50. Like, aged 50.
Oh, okay.
That's what she's supposed to be. Not 70, 50.
Right.
But she started acting when she was 16. And was one of the biggest stars, and now she lives in this Havisham-like house, you know, this great big house that's ill cared for.
Yeah, they even
just her and her butler.
Yeah, they even make reference to Great Expectations, Miss Havisham, in the movie.
Of course they do.
I kind of miss movies that you had to know things like that in order to understand all the jokes. And anyway, she thinks that he is there to bury her dead chimpanzee.
That is not a euphemism.
That is not a euphemism.
God.
And they show the dead chimpanzee, and he tells her that no, he's a writer, and he writes for movies, and she is less than kind to him because as far as she's concerned, the movies left her behind. You know, all this talk, and saying nothing. You know, I'll get to her character in a little bit. We'll just do the rest of the story. She effectively hires him not for cash, but for favors. You know, like she pays off his rent. She buys him clothes. She gives him trinkets for him to help set her movie that she's writing, Salome, which she will play Salome, you know, in her great big comeback role. And over time, she falls in love with him, kind of this reverse Stockholm syndrome. You know, that's where the misery part comes in. You know, this, this Annie Wilkes.
But at no point is he, like, tied to a bed.
Yeah. You know, he's no point is he tied down. He can't really go as he pleases because she keeps tabs on him and the butler keeps tabs on him. But it's implied that he's supposed to stay put and help her get this thing done. He doesn't really... I don't ever see him really reciprocating these feelings. But he's not unkind to her. He's not being vicious. As they go along, she just becomes more and more enamored with him and this movie that they're writing together, which is terrible. You know, they get it done, they send it off, and she's expecting Cecil B. DeMille to call her back saying, when can we start doing this? Because he's the only director she wants to work with.
And it's bad because she's over his shoulder the whole time.
Yeah.
He can't actually make it any good. Everything has to be about her. It's a very egocentric movie that she wants to do. So he's goes out at one point and meets up with the woman who really smashed up his...
The reader.
The reader who smashed up his one screenplay. And she tells him about, well, one of your ideas was pretty good. It was real. It was, we can make something of it. And so they start working together, and she starts falling in love with him.
Of course. He just must have these pheromones or some shit.
He must, because he's not reciprocating really in either way. More so with the younger woman. But even then, at one point, he's like, you need to marry the guy you're engaged to.
That he's friends with. So,
that I mean, I'm friends with. And you need to stay at least 2 feet away from me. You know, just
don't
stop
stand
this.
So close to me.
Yeah, pretty much.
So he... All this is going on, you know, kind of at the same time. And the older woman, Norma, she finds out about it. She tries to sabotage his relationship with the younger one, the reader. And it's not going quite according to anybody's plan. So he basically just lays into this older actress, this Norma Desmond. He's like, no, you don't get it. Nobody is waiting for you. All these fan letters that you're getting, your butler / first director / first husband have been writing.
Yeah.
Have nice. Been writing to you every day. You know, you don't have any fans out there. What you have are movie people who remember you as a legend, but they don't want to see you anymore. You know, all these riches that you have are meaningless. You know, the pool, the car, that, because she gets a call from the studio. We desperately want to see you. We want to talk to you. They want to rent her car, which is an old Fichetta, I think is what it's called. It's Auto Fichetta, which is an Italian-made car. It is a ridiculously expensive, you know, top-of-the-line kind of thing when it was first made, but no one ever...
Yeah, very odd-looking.
No one ever really used it. Fun fact, the guy who played Max, the butler slash first husband, first director, didn't know how to drive a car. And so anytime they had a driving scene, they were towing, you know, towing the Isotto. And he still managed to drive it into a gate, which meant that this like five of a kind car that existed, which is now in a museum in Italy.
Now there's a four of a kind car.
Got dinged up because the guy couldn't drive. When after he lays in and he's going to move, he's going to go back to Cleveland to be a copy editor because that's, you know, where all writers come from. She shoots him. She kills him.
Oh.
And that's the, you know, how did I get here? There's that. Somewhere between him telling her off and her shooting him, she loses pretty much all track of reality. And the cops are there, the reporters are there, and she starts thinking they're here to film me. they're here to film my new picture. And so coming down the steps, she's asking what the scene is. You're the princess descending the staircase. And she comes down very gracefully in her silent movie way, stops, has a speech, and then gives that last line, that Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up. The actress playing Norma Desmond, for me, I want to say Gloria Swanson, yeah, but as soon as I say
it's Gloria Swanson.
Gloria Swanson, she actually was a silent film actress. She was a star, and all of that is on display in what you might think would be almost an insulting thing, but her expressions, her eyes, her hands, everything that she does is so overly dramatic, like she never turned the cameras off in her mind. And so there's this layer of sad humor that kind of sits in there because everything she does, it's like she's doing it to a camera that's not really there. And so the way that she looks, the way that she moves is very grotesque almost.
Yeah.
She's this beautiful woman who is
even at the age of 50.
At the age of the way that it's played is, you know, she goes in for these beauty treatments that don't do any different.
I'm making fun of the fact that she thinks 50 is
right.
Yeah. She's an old crone at the age of 50.
Well, if for Hollywood speak, you kind of are.
Yeah.
I mean, once you get past,
25.
35 pushing it at 35, but if you're a woman, it gets really, really hard. Yeah.
I know.
So, William Holden, who plays the kept man, as it were, is like the perfect straight man through this. Because even when he has the zinger, the one-liner, it comes off perfect. You know, just this, you know, oh, here's the opening, here's the punchline, bang. There's no comic, though. Everything that's funny in this, and it is funny, comes from this juxtaposition of sad and ironic.
It's just kind of weird, you know, funny.
Wow, we're assuming this 30-year-old guy who is being held prisoner by this 50-year-old woman who's not actually caging him up anywhere, but she's just...
There are times when he walks out the front door.
You know, he is so desperate to be a writer in Hollywood that he's willing to subject himself to this. I understand why it's a classic. Some movies you watch is like, how? You know, Tree of Life is like, how is this getting such great reviews?
Don't get me started on that one.
But you understand what I mean. I can see that what you're doing from a technical aspect is impressive, but from a storytelling aspect, from an acting aspect, I don't get it. I don't understand why this is a classic thing. I understand this one. This one is... they filmed it in secret mostly so that it wouldn't face up to the studio censors or production code teams. You know, they made the movie and then they showed it to people, and Hollywood hated it.
Of course,
because
they did.
It kind of pulled off the veil of how does Hollywood treat those that are no longer the darlings, and it was ugly and mean and glorious because we kind of like seeing, you know, things fall. I mean, that's why movies like Logan in some ways are made. Is how do you see that last stand or that last fall of
yeah,
a hero?
It's beautiful but tragic ending. Yeah.
Uh-huh. So it's, I kind of hope one of these is bad so I can rip into it. You know, that was kind of what I was expecting when I said I'm going to look at these American Film Institute's top 100, is that eventually I'd run into one. It's like, what the heck, man? And I'm pleasantly disappointed, you know, because now, twice now, really good movies that I understand. I get it. I realize that doesn't make this funny. And I wish I could be funny about it, but go see it with some friends.
It's on Netflix.
It's on Netflix. Appreciate it. And you won't have to watch it too many times beyond that. It's not, no. There's some stuff going on in the background, and I'm sure if you had a deep understanding of the history of Hollywood, there'd be a lot of cool stuff in there. I mean, Buster Keaton's in the movie, you know, as one of the bridge players. He was the only one of the actors who knew how to play bridge. And so the director just said to watch Buster during that scene and hold the cards the way he does. And you can see that.
Nice.
You can see all of them just kind of out of the side of their eye watching this guy hold cards and shuffle them, and they're doing the exact same thing just at like two beats later.
Nice.
As things are going. Cecil B. DeMille is in this, and they show him like filming Samson and Delilah, which was going to be his next big movie. You know, so it was a movie that was being filmed at the time that other films are being made. It's entirely present. It's like, oh, Cecil B. DeMille is going to do Samson and Delilah. Well, we're going to have him film Samson and Delilah during our movie.
Yeah.
You know, so it works out. It makes sense. I loved it in a way that I love great pieces of art. I'm not going to put it up in my house, but I can certainly appreciate it for what it is. See it with friends. My final word.
Yeah. Going back to her, you were saying that she was, you know, overacting basically, mm-hmm. but not verbally, not orally. Yeah. Like this is not making fun of Mr. Shatner, because if he ever wanted to come on the show, I would gladly let him. But he's one of those people that kind of overacts with his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
The way things come out is overly dramatic at times. When Norma Desmond is overacting to a camera that's not there, she's keeping
steady.
Thank you. A steady tone in her voice, but her body is over. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so, and it's well done. And you can see why she was a silent film star as she's doing it. BTW, one of the side little things in there is that once a week she shows a movie in her own house, you know, for just her and Mr. Gillis. And it's always one of her movies. The movie that they show is a movie that wasn't released in America. It was actually her. It was Gloria Swanson, directed by the guy who played the butler.
Nice.
That was never released. It was released in like
Italy.
This
film is so meta.
You know, it was released in like Italy or something. But that was it. You can't find it. You can't get it.
Nice.
So it's just kind of an interesting little side piece.
Nice.
So anything else to say?
I'm good.
Nothing?
No, I think we're good.
So for Kent Harris, Darren, Justin, myself, Buzz Time, Shirtosaurus, and GameStop, this has been the Geek Cave. Everyone's a geek for someone. Something. Someone. Everyone's a geek for someone? Oh my.
You were so close.
Everyone's a geek.
Period.
We can just say that. Everyone's a geek for something. Have a great one. We'll hear you next time.